Welcome everyone to the wrestling show, as usual on a Tuesday, nice and early for everybody. I'm Cab Manning from the Lingus Mafia, along with my cohort, as usual, Mr. Billy Body Dirty Sheets himself.
Hey, I hope you guys cashed in on that preview show, because I swept Payback 100%. So you didn't even have to be a betting member, because actually my predictions were 100%. So what I predicted, and then I got the results through on Sunday, what to bet, all ended up being the same. So you kind of got the shit for free on that 30-minute little special I did. But I didn't really go too in-depth onto last week's Raw and SmackDown. So if Cav has anything to say about that, we'll cover it through the process of Raw and, of course, Payback, which we'll start with.
And the one thing from SmackDown, pretty much the only thing that happened, which was funny because I'm watching it and I'm like, it was kind of a boring show. And like me and Umar on our group text, we both said, SmackDown was great. And it was only because of one thing with 2 seconds at the end of SmackDown, which everybody knows, that we finally get the Roman Reigns as a bad guy.
I want to talk about it in depth, but we'll talk about it at the main event, because I'm just on the fence as if to whether this was the most effective way to do it. But obviously not when you're looking at the course of history, because there have been so many moments when we're ready to boo him. But I think even now, how you feel about how this was done, I think obviously there's a sense of gratitude that we're getting anything. And I think generally where this product is at, where you've got Roman Reigns' turn, Aleister Black's doing a turn, Retribution is looking a little bit more respectable.
That's Retribution, by the way, not Retribution.
Yeah, I got that in mind. The Ray Dominic Mysterio storyline's good. They brought Keith Lee in. Whether you think it's good, bad, whatever, what do you think about the music, the ring attire? But the fact is that stuff is going on, whether it be the stuff with Big E going solo all the way up high up to what's going on with Reigns or this Drew Orton storyline. I'm actually engaged now in a product. The boredom levels have gone down. It isn't a stale show that I'm struggling through. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect, and we'll point that out throughout the show. But I'm a lot happier watching it over the last 2 weeks. I think it's at the best level it's been at throughout this year under these conditions.
Well, let's go through each thing. Let me ask you, what's your favorite Riot Squad promo?
I only have the pre-show match in my review here because of that terrible promo that they cut afterwards. I mean, it's always bad. It's always like punny.
Yeah, but very.
I riot to live. And I live to riot, which is what they said at the end. And they went over to the desk and did this. So Booker T, JBL, and all those guys are standing there, and they're all like out of breath, and they go on a table to cut the promo, and then they come out with this. It was so cringeworthy. And loads of stuff on the pre-show was cringeworthy. There was this bit where R-Truth had to go in and just do improv with JBL, Booker T, and all that, and about him turning up to the wrong Raw talk on the wrong day or whatever, and that didn't work either. Most stuff with Truth works, so it was all a bit cringy on the pre-show, but it was worth watching just for the cringiness.
What do you think of Charlie not knowing that Drew had a hairline fracture instead of a fucking skull fracture or whatever, that Lawler had a fucking remind her or tell her?
Just the tweet, and she was like, oh, that's good, that's much less than what. It's funny because I thought that, like, because it was the jawline fracture, that it would be so dumb as to send him to TV on Raw on Monday, but they didn't do that.
Yeah, thank God. That's what I was waiting for, that he'd be totally fine after getting kicked in the head 3 times. And might we say, the DM that you got, who says K5 is dead? Because someone asking if Drew's really okay or if this is fucking fake.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke
about it. It's startling to me.
We turned around and said, maybe we don't understand our fan base at all, because people are following me but are still asking their questions. And we do a very much like non-kayfabe show where we reveal inside stories and talk about the booking and the writing. And there's just no way you can, I would feel that you can come away from the show and not understand that this product is booked, choreographed, etc. But I don't know. Like,
That's a credit to them, I guess, that someone would actually have that line blurred and go, fuck, I know everything's fake, but did they really fuck him up by accident? You know, I guess, but I mean, I don't see how it's impossible.
I guess it has to be only for that segment. It cannot be an overriding belief that this thing is real.
I think they thought he clipped him too fucking much and he really did go away in an ambulance, but... I mean,
there is no podcast though that is completely K5. I always thought about when Austin got older and he's old enough to really carry himself on the show, maybe like, you know, 11, 12 years old. If we could do like a K5 show for kids. But I actually talked about with Derek about it once. But
that's hard to even imagine to do. I don't even know if I could get myself through that.
Well, no, it wouldn't be for you. It's a kids' podcast.
I know, but like, would you be able to almost like keep a straight face and do it? It's very difficult. Like, report on it like it's real.
It's weird because when I came up with this idea a couple of years ago, Austin was completely K5, and now he gambles.
It was Santa Claus for kids, yeah.
Yeah, now he like does bets and things on it.
He gambles now.
Yeah. Oh, he gambles now. He started gambling when he was like 8 years old. He gambles now, so there's not. I mean, it would have been difficult to get through these pay per views during this post lockdown without gambling through these pay per views. But I think this particular one, this payback pay per view, was one of the better ones in terms of the length and everything they put out there. I thought it was. It didn't have the Dominic versus Rey match and I think that was the best match over the last 2 weeks. But then it had a load of other matches that I thought were better. I think it was an easier watch than SummerSlam for me, personally.
Okay, let's go right through and we'll get to... first, it was the U.S. title, Lashley and Cedric.
Yeah, and this was the first title change of three on the show, which was more than SummerSlam, which had two. Cedric gets tapped out clean. It's a good match, but then I don't understand why Cedric is coming out and attacking him like a heel afterwards when he tapped out.
Well, actually, it's not Black. Cedric. It's fucking Sorry. Apollo Crews.
You know what? I've actually got Cedric.
Yeah,
in my notes
you wrote there. Down Cedric in the notes, but I'm like, yeah, that Apollo Crews had the title. What are you trying to say? They all look the same.
They're all booked the same. That little group. But I in my notes, when you run through my notes, which I've actually texted the calf today, we're using a different format today.
Trying not to give you a 2-hour show.
Yeah, you'll see that the group has just called catering, as in that's the faction name. I've just throughout the notes it'll say catering said this and catering did that and the business beat up catering, because that is honestly that has to be the group name, because that's what MVP has labeled them and that's where they always are and they're always losing too. Like the way they got killed on Raw Underground was hilarious to me. But here we finally get the belt off Apollo and Lashley gets it. I mean, we saw that coming for a while.
Yeah. We said he'd go through the two and then get stopped by the main guy. Mm. And pay-per-view was under 2 hours or just about two and a half.
Two and a half, around about two. I think 224, maybe. I'm not sure.
Which I'm fine with. That's what's startling to me, that their regular every Monday TV show is longer than their pay-per-view. It shouldn't be, should it?
No, it shouldn't. And there are parts of most Raws you can cut out. This
Oh yeah.
Week it was limited. I mean, my main issue with Raw, as you see further down the notes, was the lack of time given to the main event. And I'm usually the one saying, oh, the matches are too long. But I think leaving 8 minutes to that match wasn't the best idea, and there was stuff you could have cut from the show, but we'll talk about that when we get down to it. But yeah, this pay-per-view at 2:30 or so was nice.
Do you think are you buying Big E's push at this point? It's I'm trying to
I this is one of the things I did touch on, and some of the stuff here I've written more in these notes I didn't touch on that little mini show I did, and we want to discuss it further. I've done stuff like Keith Lee's Ring Attire, and they talked about Big E, and he cuts that like shoot promo on Talking Smack, which has still come back and been a show that you need to see. Like it was before, and now it's come back, and it's still a good show like it was before. And the Miz is on.
Real.
And yeah, they do for the first week. Miz kind of does the whole "All Lives Matter" thing. He doesn't actually say "All Lives Matter," but Big E's doing the whole "Ooh. you got more opportunities," and yes. Kofi got less opportunities, and all that. And then this week they took it straight down to storyline, and it was down to Big E saying that he knows when to get serious, he knows when to flip the switch. And my point was on the last show that he may think that, but he can't. He's not in tune with what we're thinking. And once there's a presentation of Big E away from the New Day, we need that separation in terms of music. We need him. We need new music. We need new attire. We need him to get serious. And the fact that it hasn't, they haven't flicked the switch and done it immediately through the separation. And he thinks that they can do it slowly just through character subtleties. I don't think that's right. I think with this audience, you need a complete and blatant switch of a button. So you need him to come out to different music, different attire, and all of a sudden be serious. I would have even gone back to the five count stuff with the five music and all that to show that this is a different Big E, but he didn't feel that he needed to do that. He actually said, I know how to do this, and this is how I'm going to do it, and I know when to get serious, etc. I disagree. I think we needed that clarity. And I think now the only way you really get serious is with a heel turn. And I know this company are going to disregard it because they did it with Kofi. They didn't listen the whole time, even to the point where my 9-year-old was saying, or 8-year-old at the time was saying, this is stupid. I don't think that he's going to be champion for long because he still comes out to the New Day music and he still has pancakes, etc. And if an 8 picking up on that, then there's something seriously wrong. And with Big E, the presentation is the same. Is he going to get loads of wins? Yeah, he's going to get wins. He just plowed through Sheamus. Is he going to get all the way up to getting a title match? Probably. But whether we're going to be sitting at home and we're on board of it, and he thinks that he knows exactly when to do what, I don't think that's the correct assessment, and I don't think that's going to be in line with the way people feel.
Do you think they do something with him to where he is Mr. Positivity all the way into a title match, loses the title match, and then kind of fucking flips out and is like, fuck this, I do have to get serious, and kind of, I guess, turns heel a bit?
No, because I think that we're seeing elements of the seriousness coming through, and I think they want to do like the subtle transition, and in terms of go between being comedic and being serious. But the thing is the one thing that hasn't worked with Drew since he's been the champion is the parts where he has the McMahonisms put in, where he needs to throw in the catchphrases, and when he comes down to the rings and says kits and kittens or whatever. Oh, and yeah, it's all that stuff that doesn't work with serious like baby faces when they have comedy thrown in. And I can understand comedy works when it's a burn, like when a comment's like, oh, that's a burn or a comment, or it's a shoot comment or whatever, when Drew called Rollins a prick or whatever. That's when it works, and that's when you can implement like comedy into the routine when you're mocking somebody or you have that comedic timing. It doesn't work when it's forced. And with this Big E thinking that he can go and flip between New Day Big E and then have serious moments in the ring or show that he can have a temper when triggered, I don't think it works. The whole thing of I'm really funny until you trigger me, that doesn't work. I don't think it works. It's too complex for people.
See, I was thinking he gets there, loses, and he's like really frustrated by it, but his New Day guys are back at this point, and they're kind of like, you know, don't worry about it, but he's really frustrated by it. And it's like, but they needle him and dig at him because they do this on the podcast for them all the time where they bust his balls. So, I mean, they could be like, Kofi could be like, that's all right that you got that far and didn't win, unlike me, who did. And they just laugh at him a little bit. And then he finally just is pissed and he fucking tears them apart to be a bad guy. But that's in a different world.
What do you think of like the going in between in terms of the music, the pancakes,
with the whole what your son said about you couldn't take Kofi seriously when he came out because there was no change. It was him and the group going one on one. I thought he should have came out completely different.
He can at least fire up. Biggie can fire up, right? Mm-hmm. Kofi didn't really have that fire, but I still don't think it's enough.
Now, it was hard, too, because I saw them really trying when he was, like, yelling at Graves, you know, do you feel me and all that kind of shit, and trying to get really intense about it. But to me, it's the music and presentation that don't make it as believable. If he came out to the other music even, just that, and was screaming at Graves, I would have taken it more serious. But when the guy comes down to the ring, not this last time, but the very first time he did by himself, he did that fucking roll to the ring again. And it's like, what are you doing?
That was trolling Booker T, because Booker T said that he needed to get serious. And even on the pre-show, Booker T was saying it again. And JBL said to him, where he goes, well, you had the spinneroony, look how far you got. So, I mean, JBL was kind of defending Big E, saying that he could get there without being serious. But that was the thing. Booker T had that one move. And the spinneroony was a heel thing. That's not a fucking goofy thing at all. No, they're rewriting history. Spinneroony was a cocky heel thing where it was like, I'm doing this because I'm so in control of this bum that I'm wrestling. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember that because WWE only remember how they changed it. And it's always rewriting history. And to have the argument, oh, Booker T became a champion with a spinneroony, so Big E can be a champion with pancakes and rolling down to the ring and shitty tag team music. No, that's not the same thing at all. It's not comparable.
Riddle and Corbin. I'm glad you had this in the notes because I didn't take the notes down and I probably wouldn't have remembered to say it. My God, the best thing in this entire thing was the promo ahead of time. Oh my God, go ahead.
So this has gotten so much heat online where they're saying, oh, necessary and why did you do this?
Oh,
and
it's God. Baseless.
But it's like, okay, so
it was beautiful.
I understand that it stems from that. Their point is that this stemmed from Matt Riddle defending himself against rape, so they say.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened. Matt Riddle's allegation wasn't a rape allegation. Matt Riddle's allegation was that he pulled his dick out and told a girl to suck it. And she said she felt objectified and also obligated. So she felt objectified and she did it anyway. I don't think the obligation was there. I don't think if you tried to say no, I think you probably would have been fine. But I wasn't there. And apparently, like, he denies the whole incident anyway. He's had to come out and say that he cheated on his wife. And I heard one podcast saying, oh, that's going to be there forever for his kids to see.
My God.
And they shouldn't be using it. Well, you made the point yourself. It's already out there. And it will be there forever for his kids to see. I mean, it's not like this is some big secret. He went out and did a promo or did a serious video. Sorry, it wasn't a promo. It was a serious thing at the time where he turned around and said, I admit to this, but I don't admit to this. And I'm embarrassed and I apologize to my wife, etc. It's already out there. His kids can see it.
Yeah, he posted a video on his own Instagram.
Right. So as far as I'm concerned, this becomes usable now in a storyline because it's been acknowledged. Does it fit with Riddle's character? No, because he's like a surfer dude and whatever. But as you can see at the end of this match, which was a very like standard Corbin match, I thought this was like the worst match on the show, even though it wasn't too bad. But Corbin attacks him afterwards, which means the storyline is going to continue, which means after you put that line out there, there's going to be more of it this Friday, unless they listen to all these like
God.
SJWs online and they pull away from this, but they already started it. And I think that it's fair game once Riddle goes on and says, yes, I cheated on my wife. They're not saying he's a rapist. They're saying he's a cheat because he said he's come out and said to all his millions of followers, he's a cheat. And do you think, just like the Jeff Hardy thing where they were getting criticism for going ahead with booking the sobriety storyline, that they didn't contact Matt Riddle and say, hey, do you want to do this?
Yeah.
He obviously did. And he obviously said, that's fine, bro. So why does everybody else need to get their back up and try and ruin everything that we get, which is closer to, which closer represents a better story overall.
Do you think, you know how they did with Hardy, like anytime he's around somewhere, Corbin would show up and be like, uh-oh, don't start fucking drinking when they're in the back or something. Do you think Riddle is like in the back just shooting the shit with like the makeup lady and Corbin comes by and goes, careful ladies, he's known around here.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Oh my God, that would be so good. Be like, watch out, everyone. This guy's a fucking poon hound. Back away. So
yeah, I mean, or even if Corbin's like paying for escorts to like walk up to him and stuff. And
oh God, the same way with Jeff with drinks. Just keep on pushing the pussy underneath him.
Right, like that Demi. Like he gets that Demi chick onto.
Yeah, you smack go. That. Jax and Baszler, they win the tag team titles from Bayley and Sasha, furthering that storyline with Bayley and Sasha to not have Sasha have any belts. And man, that fucking finish hold was fucking fantastic. Something we've never seen before. She puts two submissions on at the same time.
I think she really needed that because like her booking has not been solid since she came onto the main roster. She's been all over the place since going into that feud with Becky. I think Heyman was booking her a little bit better, and then they lost track of what to do with her. I actually wrote a story up, I mentioned it on Russo's show, where everybody was behind this Naomi hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it got more attention, but Baszler didn't have a hashtag, and my understanding was that over the course of the last few months, when she wasn't utilized properly, there was more being said for they're wasting Shayna Baszler, they're wasting Shayna Baszler, they're wasting Shayna Baszler. So not everything comes through an organized hashtag like that, because there were people commenting on what the company were doing with Shayna Baszler, and they've obviously paid attention to that. And I think this was the best thing she's done on the main roster, which includes going through people at the Elimination Chamber, because that was largely booed. Mm-hmm. If you remember that, it didn't go down that well, even though she cleared out the whole match.
And we knew that was going to happen, too. That was the shittier part, where it was she was biting the neck of fucking Becky, but didn't have a title shot. And then this was to have the title shot at Mania or whatever the fuck it was. So it was a weird reaction by her and Jax after they won. Didn't you see that? Like, Nia's jumping up and down practically while Baszler's calm. And they're hugging each other after they hate each other.
Yeah, I mean, they got back on board with that this week. I think that slowly they'll probably try to like unify them a bit more, as opposed to setting up towards a match, because these were the two main people I would have think that would have gone for Oscar. But now it looks like they're just going to get through this next pay-per-view with Natalia. But we'll talk about that when we Raw. So, yeah, these two we'll probably have this for a while, and they may start to get along somehow, like opposites attract or whatever. But I mean, this is all forwarding the Sasha Bailey story, which has been the main storyline of the entire lockdown period.
Keith Lee gets his pay-per-view debut and beats Orton in 6 minutes and 40 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly. Yeah. Just get it over with, I guess. I mean, I guess this is obviously, let's give him someone very credible to beat right away to give him some juice.
Well, this is your chance to talk about debut and everything, because I did the Raw stuff and I talked about him coming out in the skirt and the music, and I think everybody's had their say. They changed the attire slightly.
They changed his pants on Monday to where he's not wearing the skirt.
They changed it here at the pay-per-views.
Oh, was it here too? I noticed it was on Raw.
He came out in a skirt, like a hood with a skirt on it, but he took it off and he had this green and black combo with this top. He looks like he's really uncomfortable in that top.
He's like, gotta be uncomfortable as fuck in that top. And I mean, Vince is like, oh, you look like a fat slob. I guarantee, obviously, this is what this is. But I mean, I never understand where it was very successful in NXT. There was no problem. And it's like, let's change it when you come here. I don't fucking ever understand why that would be the case.
I don't understand why you can't have a t-shirt with the sleeves cut off if you really have that much of a problem with it and just keep the same attire. Yeah. And that's what the music thing. The music thing is so fucking petty from what I understand. I think it's they're obviously they parted ways with this company CFO and they won't be using any of their.
Oh, really? Shit.
Yeah. Apparently they don't want to pay them any royalties. But with Apple Music, royalties are such a minimal thing these days.
Mm-hmm.
There's royalties to pay as well whenever it's on pay-per-view. So they don't want to get into an issue where they're taking stuff off the network years down the line or whatever.
Fuck.
but at the moment here, like pretty underwhelming. I would have gone with replacing it with your own rap or whatever. But things like this never seem to go upwards. Like when you lose something like this, it always seems to go downwards. This music's definitely not a acceptable replacement. And now we're 3 shows into this, it doesn't look like it's going to change.
Mysterio and Dominic finally get a fucking win after constantly losing. I am very impressed by Dominic. Like, there is no difference with any of the other wrestlers and Dominic. Like, if you're just watching a shadow wrestle, you wouldn't be like, oh, that guy's a fucking beginner.
No.
It's exactly. It's fucking exactly what it needs to fucking be.
I wrote when we got to the Raw notes, I said that like this guy started with 3 4-star matches. I don't and 2 4-star plus matches on pay-per-view. I think the one the week before was even 4.5-star. So and this guy's had the 2 best matches on his first 2 pay-per-views in a row. I don't know if anyone's made that start to their career, but obviously the responsibility or the credit, sorry, all lies with Rollins from getting him there. Have you ever looked at Rollins' SummerSlam record?
No.
Okay, so he has a match in 2014 with Ambrose, which is really good. Then he has that match with Cena, which everybody loves, mm-hmm. but then John
Stewart fucks it up.
Then he has a match with the Demon Finn Balor. Then they have the second best match where him and Ambrose win the titles from Cesaro and Sheamus. Then he has the match of the night at 18 where Rollins beats Ziggler for the Intercontinental belt in the opener. Then he has the best match at 19 where he beats Brock in the main event. And then he has the best match again at 20 here with Dominic. So this guy's had the best or the second best match at SummerSlam throughout his run. It seems like
Mr. SummerSlam.
He's Mr. SummerSlam. He is Mr. SummerSlam. No one says it, but
taking over for Ted DiBiase, who we call Mr. SummerSlam. Because he was in fucking so many.
You've just done SummerSlams. Yeah. Did you clock this at all?
No. Never really noticed that he was always in a great match. He's one of those, he's steady, always good. So I think like he's unsung probably because you expect it.
Mm.
So main event. We get that 3-way match, which I was aggravated to start because no Reigns to start. And I go, motherfucker, he's going to show up at the fucking end. You know, you see it, obviously. And the first clue is, why is Fiend coming out first? He's the champion. And then you see, okay, anytime that happens, there's always some bullshit because he gets attacked on the way to the ring by Braun. And they go through the spot that we've seen so many times with the ring breaking. I'd love to know how that magic works.
I think the attack was a good idea if you're going to do this, because if Roman just doesn't come out to his own music, that would have been dumb. Because then you'd be like, where's Roman and all that. So it wasn't blatant. It was kind of like they gave the opportunity to him to do this because the match started without his music playing. So what do you expect him to do when Paul Heyman's in his ear? You can imagine, you're making up your own story here, which is sometimes what you have to do with WWE, but you can imagine Paul backstage. They would have had a camera. I think they should have had a camera backstage because Paul was going, just wait. You don't need to go out there yet. Just wait.
Yeah, because then it showed, because he's not used to sneaky shit and he'd be ready to go do regular shit and Paul would be like, no, hold on, I'll show you. So it looks like Paul actually helped him win the title. But like, we saw on SmackDown, he said, fix all this stuff and I'll sign the contract. So we see once everybody's dead in the ring that he comes out, signs the contract as he walks to the ring. pretty much goes in, does his bullshit of a spear, blah, blah, and wins. It's funny because it's like, wow, they gave the belt to Fiend because he kind of had to, you know, be the third incarnation and win the title finally to solve that. At the same time, you're like, well, fuck, that kind of, why did he even get the title if you were going to do that to him? But as we said, he's babyface.
It's weird. You got to have something big lined up for Mania if you're going to plow through Roman and Fiend in this season, because I think that's what they're going to move on to now. We're going to get Roman and Fiend now as opposed to saving it for Mania season. So it'd be interesting to see. I hope we're not getting Big E versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. I really hope we're not. I think also another way you could have done this is have the music play a little bit earlier and then Paul's like, coming up and saying, no, just wait here on the ramp. And he watches the whole match. And then Heyman says, now. And then he signs a contract and walks down. And he goes, I don't think it's because he was standing up there. Fiend and Strowman don't have to go to him. He can then be he can be visualized throughout the whole match, which I think would have been a better way of doing it. But it's fine. Now is obviously the window to talk about the turn. I didn't like the reveal. Obviously, I like that it's happening because this is well overdue. And it makes the TV more compelling. And that's what we need in order to get through all these shows without the suffering. But Heyman sitting next to him in a backstage promo, as opposed to Heyman coming out with him last week at SummerSlam or Heyman coming out with him this week. I mean, I think the reveal at this pay-per-view would have been a lot better, where like Roman is coming out to the ring to his music, but he's standing there with Paul Heyman and they don't go out to the ring and then they sign a contract and then he wins and then Paul raises his hand. I think that's a better way. I don't like doing anything backstage on television. Like Roman Reigns' heel turn has essentially took place in a locker room without anybody being able to respond to it. And I understand during this period, it makes the response difficult anyway, but obviously, with all this time, when you look back to the Daniel Bryan Yes movement, you look at the win over The Undertaker, all this stuff where he said, it's my yard now. The number of matches he's had with Brock, where Heyman could have switched from Brock to Roman, all better opportunities to do it. But my understanding is the inside story of this may make this make more sense. Paul Heyman was on the same contract as Brock in terms of a talent contract. Neither of these guys had their contract renewed after WrestleMania. Now, all of a sudden, this story's come out that Brock Lesnar is no longer with the company and things like that. But Brock Lesnar didn't renew his image rights contract anyway after this recent WrestleMania, but neither did Paul. But Paul was still working on a second contract, which was a talent contract. Once Paul's talent contract didn't get renewed and Pritchard was given Raw, Heyman was free to go and work for AEW. And Brock Lesnar was also free to go and work for AEW. Like, so these guys have been lingering around free for a long time. I guess WWE think the dangers of losing Paul are higher than the dangers of losing Brock, because Brock hasn't been issued any kind of additional contract at the moment. But Heyman did. And I think once you get Heyman locked in, and you have that conversation with Roman and say, what's it going to take for you to come back? And he's always wanted to do this. I think you just appease everybody. So I think once Roman agreed that he would come back for this, that's when Paul got his contract. And that's a fat contract that Paul gets, because Paul gets paid than most of the mid-carders just to come in and do his shtick. You're talking like 750 grand for a manager. So I think Roman would have had to have had a conversation with him. And it's funny because we're on this show saying that if the Fiend turns babyface, then that would be because they've made phone calls to Roman to and don't think he's coming back. And we said that on the 100% that if they moved to the Amway Center, that they would call Roman Reigns. That wasn't on Russo's show. That was on this show, if you remember, said that there's no way they moved to Philly and they don't call him. And you actually said that, well, how is it any safer?
Yeah, I was just about to say, what makes it safer that it's a bigger place? You don't have to stand next to someone?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know, like, how he had dental work done during his pandemic. Because
that's true.
Because I didn't even know how dentists... I don't understand what's going on.
In Florida, there was a time that you didn't have any problem.
That's where he lives. But now it's all closed down again, right?
Supposedly. Yeah. Man, good God, don't even get into that. There's so much bullshit now with the CDC.
You know, I had the test. I got to go for another endoscopy on Thursday, and I had the test for COVID yesterday. Uh-huh. Made my nose bleed. It's fucking horrific.
Oh my God.
Made my nose bleed like proper. One of my nostrils. One nostril was fine. So they take the swab and they like get two swabs. Like they put one down your throat and one up your nostril, and then the other swab goes up your other nostril and down your throat again. But Jesus. It's like way back there.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched my friend have it done in Hollywood. He had to go on set. Like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, they shove that thing right into your fucking brain, and then right, they fucking deep throw you with that swab. What do you think?
Go ahead.
I am not
upset by it because of the circumstance. I think if there was a crowd, we would have totally gotten something different. I think with no crowd, it has the same effect, because I don't know if he does something in the ring and with nobody there, I think it's the same almost as I like this better where it's calm. You could hear things better. The surprise of panning to the side, there's Paul sitting next to him. I do understand what you're saying about those couple things.
But what about this way, right? What about the Braun and Bray having their match, and they're just killing each other, mm-hmm. right? And all you hear, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul. And then he says, let me introduce you.
You're expecting Brock, right?
Yeah. It's like, because Roman's in the match.
Yeah.
And they do all the things the same. The ring collapses, and then all of a sudden you hear, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman, and then let me introduce you to the next Universal Champion, and it's Roman Reigns. And that's how you should have done it. I think that would have been better.
So he signs the contract and everything, and we have no clue that he's with them. And that's the first time we see Paul. That's, you know what, I'm fine with that too. I think that's a good way as well.
You have Paul come out with the contract, and you hear, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what the fuck's going on. He comes out, he's holding the contract. He announces Roman Reigns. Roman comes out with a pen, signs it, gives it back to Paul, goes down to the ring and just does everything the same. The only difference is the reveal happens on the pay-per-view, and you hear the ladies and gentlemen after the ring collapses. Like, that would be, I think that's the in-ring reveal, I think, is just so much better. I think you're sitting there watching this pay-per-view, and all of a sudden you hear that, and then you're like proper shocked, as opposed to him, which is still shocking anyway, but I always just like the in-ring reveal better. I think, like, historically when we look at this turn, and I think people, people are like undermining this somewhat, but this should have been Hogan 96. And I know Roman's not quite there, but when you put it picture on picture next to each other, you at least need that moment where Hogan comes out, he does the leg drop, then you have Paul coming out, and then Roman comes out and signs a contract. Now your picture on picture shows Hogan coming out and dropping a leg drop, and Paul sitting next to Roman. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. Let's cruise through Raw and try to kill this in 15 minutes of a Raw. They announced that it's going to be a triple threat. As Billy, I can attest to saying, as I saw a message between him and Drew, where Drew's asking, how do they get Orton to wrestle him again? And Billy flat out saying, they'll probably do something lame like a four-way or three-way. Even though Orton's lost all his fucking matches, he'll win this and get a title opportunity.
Yep.
Christ. So there we go. And Orton shows a Photoshop of everybody in fucking bed after being kicked in the head.
You know what? The funny thing, I had this exact match as well in my mind for the main event as well, this triple threat that we ended up getting.
Jesus.
Because I couldn't think of anyone else that would be in it.
So Keith Lee actually has to fight Ziggler, and it takes him longer to beat Ziggler, who we've forgotten about because he's only in Fight Club now.
In the same text I've said, why is Keith Lee debuting against Orton in the middle of your food? Why didn't he just come in and beat Ziggler? in the same thread of texts. So everything happens here.
Oh, God. Asuka doing a promo, and Mickey comes out looking all the way live. And what's funny is, completely new outfit and everything, and those fucking dopey motherfucker Lana comes to the fucking ring in her fucking awful outfit, which is a swimsuit. She wears better outfits when she goes to the fucking beach. And she goes, "You're wearing the same, you know, nothing's changed. You've worn the same outfit since, you know, 2008 or something like that." I'm like, completely fucking different fucking outfit. It's not even close to what she's talking about.
They actually leave them out there for about 15 minutes because there's like loads of stuff that happens before they actually go back to this match. Because I've got like two like bits of notes here. But yeah, I mean, Mickey, Jesus Christ, how old is she?
Oh, she's late 40s.
My God. She just looks, it's like she does in 2006. Like, you have that little bit, I mean, the tiny little few lines on the face. Yeah. But this is fucking HD. So, like, I think if you're watching this in standard definition, she looks exactly like 2006 Mickey.
You know what's interesting is she comes out and I go, oh, okay, she's done with the storyline on SmackDown with Lana and Natty. She could move on. And then Lana and Natty show up, and I'm like, so are we forgetting that there's two brands again? And, oh, this is part of the trade-off bullshit?
They're always on Raw. They're always on Raw. This has always been on Raw.
Has this always been on Raw? This is not on SmackDown.
Yeah. No, never.
I've lost my mind, and I apologize to them, because I swear it was on fucking SmackDown.
No, never
Jesus
been on SmackDown.
Christ. Well, I apologize, WWE and Bruce. I apologize. You enjoy this Conor the Crusher stuff?
I don't enjoy it, but I think it's like more, I mean, it might be like from being a parent, but I've always felt like this was the one thing that they should like nail their colors to, because
to the flag.
Yeah. This is the one thing I think they should nail their colors to, because obviously it comes from that stuff they did with that Conor the Crusher video, I think was the most genuine thing that they did. And I think obviously it's undermined by Stephanie saying like philanthropy is the way forward. Those people that she said about companies that are involved in someone say the word. Yeah. Companies that are involved in this kind of stuff basically will benefit from it, which was a stupid and shitty thing to say publicly, whether you felt like it in the background. But the things that this kid got to do with that whole thing where he pins Triple H and all that stuff and was a Daniel Bryan fan, I think obviously that video will always be something that they can use. And obviously we have Mick Foley falling off the Hell in a Cell, which is one thing that represents, which we always kind of show people to say why we watch. Whereas this company, I think, in terms of their partners and stuff, will show that as a representation of what they are. And I think it's more genuine than Breast Cancer Month and all that kind of stuff. But again, that might be coming from a point where I have a child, but I don't mind the Conor the Crusher stuff, because it's genuinely their own thing. They're not attaching on to other charities and everything. It's something that came within. When it escalates up to changing the name of the Warrior Award and all that kind of shit, and when Dana Warrior gets involved and when Ultimate Warrior gets involved because he's a person that didn't give a shit about anybody, then it kind of like sours with me. But I think when you keep it to this one charity in this one month, I like this. This fits in. Next month, we're going to get the breast cancer stuff and all that kind of stuff. So
do you agree that Warrior was like a fucking moron?
Yeah.
So ask your pal Russo. He has said he believes Warrior is one of the smartest people he's ever met. So what does that say for you?
A moron in what sense?
That he's not a... He tries to be a bright fucking smart guy. And I think he's got like that Tyson syndrome where he tries to use big words or tries to sound intellectual where he's just a fucking idiot.
I think if we run onto Warrior and my opinions on him, we won't finish this.
Okay,
but I think on a quiet week, I think we can start with Warrior. Do you know what I'll do? I'll get Vince's take on the Armored Warrior on our show this week. I'll say, look, interesting question came up. Like, I want to know your thoughts on the Armored Warrior. And once we have that, we can even integrate the audio into this and carry on.
I'll give you quotes, so you'll be prepared. So Ivar gets a kiss on the cheek this week. Fuck. He might as well have said he fucked.
It's so fucking stupid, right? And they did all this with Manny and Otis when he was getting the kisses.
Yeah.
And
give a pig a kiss on the cheek.
You're thinking at this point, like, what? These virgins are just obviously out on this show to correspond with the other, to relate to the other virgins. So I'm watching this and thinking, oh yeah, like, I would love to get that fucking pet cheek because no one's fucking touching me. Yeah. And they've got these two fat, ugly guys in this spot. But I mean, if you're dating Mandy, you're fucking. So why are you bothered about a kiss? And especially to get a kiss from this demi chick who's a fucking, I mean, we know she's a whore. Like from being on The Bachelor, and she's going through guys in and out here. I mean, even later on, she's out there with Angel anyway, so it's proper dumb. I don't know why you have this. I just want fucking,
you know,
guys.
What's funny is you write on the notes, right? And I totally thought you just got spell checked when you were typing because you said she's a total bike. And I thought you meant right. Dyke.
No, I meant she's a bike. Like,
because I was like, well, she goes both ways because I watched her on Bachelor and Bachelor in Paradise. And she says flat out on that first Bachelor that she likes to be promiscuous. So she likes to get around and fuck. She fucking says it. And then on Bachelor in Paradise, she was fucking a girl. And she started going out. I don't know if she's still with the same chick. But I'm like, it is interesting to see because I've known her from that show. And I'm like, does she? I was looking up, does she have a contract or what the fuck is going on?
I have no idea. But I mean, if that's the case, then she should do something with Liv Morgan then.
Yeah, no shit. There you fucking go. And she'd be all into it 100%. From vapid cunt to vapid cunt, Mickey beats Lana. And, Billy jerks off to Mickey during this fucking match.
Yeah, because this goes back to like the days where she, you know, wore like those really short skirts when she came in, and then you could see like her underwear underneath. Mm-hmm. It's got like her normal like panties on underneath the skirt, like just old Mickey James. And I just, at this point, I'm just like, I'm out of there. I'm upstairs for a few minutes.
Touch briefly on Aleister Black turning into a bad guy.
Yeah, I didn't talk about this at all on the Raw show, so I thought I'd talk about it with you because we're such Aleister Black fans.
Yes.
I think you have to do this at this point. But I think it's weird because Ray really lost the eye and Black is the pirate.
Yeah, and Black has makeup running out of where his eye would be now.
Which, I feel bad for like Owens because, I mean, Owens is not really done much, and he's in this spot where he loses to Orton here, and
which is a good way to lose to him because he's been beat up by Aleister Black before the match. So,
but Black wins this feud with Owens because heels always win their first feud. So, but it depends where you go with it from there because I mean, does it lead to him being somebody that's the stopgap for Drew before Mania? Because after this Orton feud, if Drew comes out with a title, you don't really do title defenses at Survivor Series, and then you end up running through to the Rumble. So there is only actually one more feud left for Drew if he wants WrestleMania with the belt. So I wonder if that could be Aleister Black or whether they go back to Seth Rollins before he leaves to be with Becky or whatever. So I guess this is what this could be, but I don't know. I just think anything's better than what he was doing. But he's still in that little room. Because Orton goes and finds him in that room. Mm-hmm. And I say in my notes here, what would have happened if Randy Orton had to have his ring entrance second?
God forbid.
The whole plan would have fallen apart.
And I'm always figuring when he goes in those rooms, didn't he knock on the door? Isn't that supposed to set Aleister off?
I have no idea. Like, isn't it? Yeah, like you're supposed to, if you knock on his door, you want to fight him.
Yes.
I've written here the Iconics give their result away because they show the history of the Iconics.
Yeah.
I said Payne looks better because she's beaten that anorexia. She looks fire again.
And you see her before all her plastic surgery and her nose and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that's a good shout out, a good promotion for plastic surgery. The Mysterio family are backstage. And you see this daughter here, who's apparently a better wrestler than Dominic,
really?
From what I've read.
Okay.
She's supposed to be really good. But We're just going to grade her on her appearance because it's us.
Not bad. Not bad. I think she's fine. I'll have to see what kind of outfit she's wearing. But I've seen her on Instagram in bikinis and shit like that. So it's not too bad.
I think they could do an AJ Lee kind of thing with her, maybe. Like,
yeah. And she's taller than her father, too. Everybody is.
Just about.
Yeah. So I would like to see when she's in the ring finally.
So we can skate through some of this stuff because Hurt Business come out and do their promo here. They're still in a feud with catering. This is where I've got catering and everything. Cedric gets the pin and they don't beat him up, but they do beat him up backstage, which was
makes no
odd.
Sense.
And after that, we move on to Iconics versus Riot Squad. The result of this was pretty much given away when they showed their videos. I've just written here, it's weird to split up a team when you have no teams. And I don't know what exactly it means. Does this mean they cannot be seen together backstage at all?
That's what's funny, because they're like, 10 years of friendship is over. No, you. I can be friends with you. I just can't tag team. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, like, it's not mean, you're going to delete, like, you have to delete numbers afterwards. I don't know how this stipulation exactly works. I mean, I know, even what I knew, or I writ here, I was doing my notes as I go, and I put Billy's absolutely going to be dead off the back of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I wrote that before she was killed in Raw Underground.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no way that Billy's going to be the beneficiary of this.
No.
It's going to be all about Peyton.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, oh, here goes Peyton's run. And the first thing I thought when the Underground thing happened, I'm like, so is Billy going to be a good guy now because Peyton shoved her in the ring? She doesn't come off as a good guy.
No.
Still awful.
No. I would think she just ends up just being her manager. That's what I would have done.
But, oh, really? Jeez.
I don't know about Raw Underground either.
We get to build up Titus for Raw Underground.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Okay. Like, because I talk about Raw Underground is as a whole. We got Rollins out there. You choose out Murphy. Murphy then gets attacked by Dominic up the ramp. And then I put here Rollins carries Dominic to his third consecutive four-star match of his career, because this was, I think, the best qualifying match of the night. Again, he has another good match. But I think this is building towards, I think if anybody beats Rollins on his way out now, it could be Murphy, because Murphy's moveset is babyface to me.
It is. I mean, and I've always thought Murphy's fucking fantastic in the ring. Here's your notes about Titus. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, so this was a segment that was recorded last week that didn't make air because they had so much stuff. And I spoke about Raw Underground on the last show that I did, but I just want to get your take on it. I think that Raw Underground is the revolutioning and freshening up of the squash match. I think, as opposed to just having people that you want to utilize and showcase on TV, I think if you put them in Raw Underground and they get to squash people there, it's a brand new way to do the squash match, and it breaks up the show. That's kind of how I've taken Raw Underground now and where I see it in the show. And I think that it should be a permanent thing, at least for the next 4 to 6 months.
It seems like it's sticking around. And I mean, I don't even really know what to think of it at this point still. I thought it was to try to get people over that were, like, non-existent at this point, like when they bring back Titus.
But that's what the squash matches were used to be on Super Challenge. But I think this is a 2020, like, version. I think almost this is where how it's being used. And I think if that's the use of it, and I've not heard anyone pick up on this, I think that's definitely a good way to go. Because the squash matches obviously would need to be freshened up because they've been happening for our whole lives since we've been watching. So,
and I guess it was like they're introducing a lot of new people through this as well, which you have a note about later about someone in the fucking ring we'll get to. Your buddies, the Street Profits.
I wrote here, so, and I don't know if you agree, if there were crowds there, because I don't know, I don't talk to anybody that likes this shtick. Even Austin can't stand them. And I wonder if they would be getting booed and whether they would be heels by now, whether the crowd would return. Because I think this is an act that people hate.
You know what, though? I think they'll still be good guys because they were doing, I don't know if it was like, well, it wasn't as long before the fucking shutdown happened, But they were doing all this same bullshit, going through the crowd, and they're fucking screaming and hooting and hollering and acting like fucking dopey fucks. And the crowd was fine with them.
Okay.
But I would think I would get a hint of it, but...
What happens when you leave bread out?
When you leave what?
Bread out for too long.
Oh, it gets stale.
Yeah.
Do we need to even mention 24/7 shit? No, Truth gets the title again.
Every finish is a roll up. Like they're not even hitting each other on the head with like bricks or anything. It's just a fucking. People are getting rolled up. All the. I'm done with this bullshit now. Like I think it needs to go. The Profits in Gaza, mm-hmm. at Andrade's next. This is all the retribution stuff. I thought. Because the nickname backstage, the talent called Kevin Dunn and Bruce is copy paste high five. And I thought that all was going to happen here was Ivar was going to come out, do the Triple H Mr. Perfect thing where he keeps taking her away.
Oh.
But instead, Retribution comes out and Garza runs off as soon as the lights go. And then everybody gets beaten up, including Zelina Vega. And we'll cover this collectively because later on, we don't need to go back to it later. Demi Burnett's backstage and she says, Restoration walked out.
Yeah, that's Restoration.
I don't know if she's trying to be dumb or whether she's just
dumb. I think that's a hard thing to just remember. I mean, I think it's Summerfest is what that is.
So they come out the back door then, and then he does run off after telling her that all he cares about was... And then he runs off, she trots off in her heels, and these fucking group
and they don't do anything. Yeah.
They don't go after her.
Because I go, is she going to take a bump? Nope.
Yeah, Mia Yim is still obviously one of these in the group because you can see through the eyes.
See your slant eyes.
yeah. And I think when we don't know who's going to be permanently in this group because all NXT guys under the masks at mm-hmm. the moment, which I spoke about on Russo's show and who they were. But I imagine she's 100% in because Keith Lee is with her and he's in the main roster. So I think Mia Yim, I would like put my money down on her being 100% in. Mm-hmm. We've spoken about we'll speak about Raw Underground stuff collectively because the four horse women, the other two do squashes. Well, one looks like a heroin addict.
She
ends up fully killing off Billy Kay because Peyton throws her in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going on with the Iconics. Maybe Billy Kay just goes off TV for a while now.
That's what I think.
The last thing that happened was Raw Underground saw the Hurt Business kill Catering. Last week they killed everybody, and this week they killed that group Catering, which is Apollo, Cedric, and Ricochet.
Gotta have a t-shirt with their silhouettes at a catering table.
I mean, Mustafa Ali's not even on TV anymore.
Like, yeah, I forgot that he wasn't even there. I forgot he was part of it.
Maybe down to his tweets and everything. Adam Pearce had loads of like backstage stuff to do here. He's got a new role. He even had that interaction with Vince on SmackDown. He's mm-hmm. some kind of head of security now or whatever. So this is the role of a lifetime for him. And then we roll on to the main event. And I spoke about this earlier when I said to you that I think this could have had 25 minutes, because mm-hmm. I said, look, it's got 11 minutes to end. So it's going to be 8-9 minute match. They kill 2 minutes powdering as to like, they don't want to go mm-hmm. up to Keith Lee. Then they do stand-up double team on Keith Lee, who dominates 80% of this match. And then we get a commercial. So the actual action that we see in the match is 5 minutes. So I thought that was a little bit weird, but the finish was totally predictable. I mean, this match and this finish was pretty much exactly what I had in my mind as to how they get back to Orton. I almost literally text this to Drew in terms of when he was asking me, how do we get back to the Orton match? And I say, multi-man match, Orton wins, because that's all this company are going to do.
And Keith Lee almost steamrolled over Orton after the RKO. When Orton was trying to get around him, he got rolled over.
You know, there was a whiteboard up where at the start of the show, and there was a show of hands between creative. It was like, who wants to build towards a triple threat, and who's in favor of beat the clock? And that would have been the two things that they would have had there in terms of deciding as to how Orton ended up going. And they could have even had somebody try and slow Lee down earlier so that he didn't get to win. As quickly, we could have had Ziggler doing all of the stuff where he rolled out the ring and Ziggler's like deliberately made it really long to beat. And that would have given you another match, I think, with Ziggler and Lee without hurting Lee and without putting Lee in a triple threat match, which he didn't win. But as I said, he got 80% of this match. I mean, it was just him fielding off the other two guys. And the finish, like, there's no way that we didn't see this coming. Lee having the win and Orton hitting the RKO and then pinning. It was very, like, weird because he RKO'd Lee and then he jumped over him and made sure he had to go across the Rollins because we can't pin Lee. So
that is what is funny. He drops him right there, and that guy said he almost got steamrolled over because Lee has to get out of the ring. And instead of just pinning the guy you just RKO'd, you go all the way across the ring to the other guy to pin.
Yeah. But I think this was a good Raw. I think the only thing I put there, I thought the iconic stuff, I think it deserved. I think you should have announced this match on social media or on this show and said, next week, we're going to have one team breaks up. Because just to do it out of the blue, I think wasn't the right thing to do, because everything you did here, you could have done next week. And without that 10 minutes, then this 10 minutes goes on to the main event. I don't think anybody's complaining. I know it's rich because it's coming from, like, people are saying, oh, the matches are too long and matches that go through two breaks don't need to happen, etc. Well, this is a pretty big match that could have had line of pay-per-view. So to leave it 11 minutes with 8 minutes of ring time, I think it's not really the right way to go about it. And then even earlier on when he had Street Profits and Andrade and Garza out there before Retoration came down and done their attack, I think they could have come down maybe 5 minutes earlier. But I think that's my only complaint. But generally, like, for that to be the only complaint comparison to what we've suffered through, I think all of the Thunderdome stuff over the last 2 weeks is better. I think the stories are better. I think, like, I'm interested in seeing where six or seven things go, like Big E, Black's turn, Orton Drew, Roman Reigns, Retribution. Yeah, there's loads of stuff going on. Things are happening.
Yeah, it's a lot less stale than it was before.
He watched Corbin says next week.
Oh, God. If Corbin does what we say, oh, my God, would it be the fucking greatest. Well, we better get this show out there so they can actually write that. And take from us so they can get their storylines better. Where can we find you, Billy Boy?
Yeah, I'm at thedirtysheets.com. Just swept all of my betting picks this week, so you're getting on time for Clash of Champions. Otherwise, you can head to lockbetting.com to get all of my sports picks. Just had another profitable month in August. There's actually no better time to sign up because the NBA is finishing, MLB is going on, there's UFC cars, the soccer, the European soccer all starts back up in the middle of September, WWE pay-per-views. So, yeah, lockbetting.com is the place that I would go. But if you just want wrestling stuff, it's $5 for the news at thedirtysheets.com and $40 for the betting packages, which you boxing, UFC, and WWE. And follow Austin's Instagram at Austin's Toys.
All my nonsense is at Lingus Mafia, Instagram and Twitter. For Mr. Billy Body, I'm Cameron.
What a time!